Colossians chapter 4.
Mike.
I was looking, when everybody said Mike, I looked over there at Mike. Wondered what he was doing now. This is a chapter about two-bit disciples. And chapter 4, verse 1 is just a continuation of what we studied yesterday. Verse 2, continue in prayer and watch in the same with thanksgiving. It's the same, it says, what it literally says, it says elsewhere, is pray constantly. Pray without ceasing, but don't pray just by rote. The word watch there means give. Don't let your mind wander. Remember, you've got to hear this. From God's perspective, your thoughts are your prayers. Does anybody believe that? Can you imagine what your prayer life looks like from God? I'm going to set aside an hour a day to pray. I'm going to get up early and pray. Oh, isn't that sweet? Isn't that nice of you? It's pray without ceasing. It's pray to the right place, to the right God, with the right attitude without ceasing. Bring every thought into captivity to the obedience of Christ. Let every thought that cannot stand against it is finished be gone. Cast it down. This is where the Christian life is lived. It's not lived in going to Bible study. Especially it's not lived in coming to Bible study when your mind wanders. If this isn't important to you, then you shouldn't come. If you're an employee and you don't come to morning Bible study, God help you. Yeah, you get down to $35 a week. Continue in prayer and watch in the same with thanksgiving. And also, in that prayer, pray also for us that God would open us a door of utterance to speak the mystery of Christ, for which I am also in bonds. Guess what? This doesn't mean he was in jail. It means he was handcuffed to a Roman guard 24 hours a day. That's an incredible... And it gets worse. He was in Rome, in prison, facing a tribunal which included Nero, essentially all had forsaken him, and he's only concerned about your praying. And that God would open him a door. Walk in wisdom toward them that are without, redeeming the time. It simply means you're on the constant lookout for how you can meet someone's need outside the mystery. That by your laying down your self-interest for them, they would be partakers of the mystery. How many of you are that? How many of you rather use the world for your own utilitarian purposes? Redeeming the time. For the days are evil. Have an urgency about your life because of whom we have dealings with. Let your speech always be with grace, seasoned with salt, that you may know how you ought to answer every man. Not try to con every man, but answer them when they have a question. every sacrifice in the Old Testament had to be seasoned with salt, because salt is a type of eternity. Let your speech be seasoned with eternity so that you're not going to give some harebrained advice about with some time-dependent answer. Does everybody understand what that means? Is your speech seasoned with salt? If you give breath to the lower kingdom, it can't be. If you give breath to the kingdom of darkness, it can't be. If you're not seeking those things which are above, if you haven't set your affection on things that are above where there is no time, then your speech will be where you set your affection. Out of the fullness of the heart, the mouth speaks. Any of you ever thought of repenting the moment your speech isn't about that which is above? Do I need to expand any further on that? All my state shall Tychius declare unto you, who is a beloved brother and a faithful minister and a fellow servant in the Lord. This letter to the Colossians went to several places. To Laodicea, to some other churches that are no longer in extent or existence. But he not only carried the letter, he was also qualified to say what Paul meant by his words and his life. Now, whom I have sent unto you for the same purpose, that he might know your estate and comfort your hearts. Paul was very concerned that all of these people who had come to know him and who he was would be discouraged because he had been in prison and was probably going to be sentenced to death. So he sent Tychius with this letter to find out their estate so he could report back to Paul, but also let them know that Paul was still standing strong in the Lord, and these were the things that he saw. And these weren't. Tychius wasn't some pope. Tychius was a guy, just like you and I, or girls. We're not talking about super disciples. We're not talking about anything but common, ordinary people. Less than ordinary from the standpoint of the world, who were in what's the word? They were energized by this mystery. With Onesimus, a faithful and beloved brother, who is one of you. So Tychius and Onesimus, if you read Philemon, was this slave that had defrauded someone, and Paul said he would pay the debt. So you got an impression of who these great ministers and preachers were? That's just the start. With Onesimus, a faithful and beloved brother who is one of you, they shall make known unto you all things which are done here. Aristarchus, my fellow prisoner, saluteth you. Now, Aristarchus, according to the ancient testimony, volunteered to be imprisoned with Paul so he could meet his needs. That's kind of neat. Where are you, Jim? You're wandering. You sure? You know it's not safe to wander. Aristarchus, my fellow prisoner, saluteth you, and Marcus, sister's son to Barnabas. Marcus is the Mark of the gospel. He wrote the gospel of Mark. Saint Mark. Let me tell you about Saint Mark. Go to Mark 16. 15. Someplace. 14, I'm sorry. This is in the Garden of Gethsemane. Now remember, Mark's father was wealthy. That's where they held the last Passover, the upper room of the last Passover. Mark is about 9 or 10 years old here. So Mark is very curious about all the stuff that's going on. Mark 14. And so he's watching. He's supposed to go to bed, but he's watching and seeing what the heck's going on with this strange group of people in his house in the upper room. Remember, all the houses in Jerusalem were built for the pilgrimage feasts, so that each house had an upper room for hospitality for the pilgrims that came to the pilgrimage feasts. Mark's father had an estate outside near Jerusalem, within a Sabbath day's journey, a big house, because it held a whole lot of people. So anyway, let's go on. So this is where Peter's cut off the ear of the, starting in verse 43 through 52 later. But Jesus in verse 48 says, "And Jesus answered and said unto them, Are you come out as against a thief with swords and with staves to take me? I was daily with you in the temple teaching, and you took me not. But the scripture must be fulfilled. And they all forsook him and fled. And there followed him a certain young man, having a linen cloth cast about his naked body. And the young men laid hold on him." In other words, the guards that had came out to arrest Christ. "And he left the linen and fled from them naked." Well, the only one that would know this is Mark. He's the young man that fled from them naked. So everybody here left Christ, including Mark, fled from him. So now Mark becomes the Saint Mark now, but he's now one of the attendants. "Aristarchus, my fellow prisoner, saluteth you, and Marcus," John Mark is his name, "sister's son to Barnabas." In other words, Barnabas' cousin. Barnabas was a major apostle, much more major than any of the disciples except Paul. "And Marcus, sister's son to Barnabas, touching whom ye received commandments, if he come unto you, receive him. And Jesus, or Joshua, which is called Justice, who are of the circumcision, these only are my fellow workers unto the kingdom of God, which have been a comfort unto me." In other words, again, everybody left him except these that are named. Now he's got a visitor from Colossae. In verse 12, Epaphras, who is one of you, who's from there, "a servant of Christ, saluteth you, always laboring fervently for you in prayer, that you may stand perfect and complete in all the will of God. For I bear him record that he hath a great zeal for you, and them that are in Laodicea, and them in Hierapolis." Now we come to the strange one. Luke, the beloved physician, and Demas greet you. Now Luke is the most educated of all the disciples. He's from Alexandria. He's probably a Greek. He's a physician. And several years before this, Paul came to Luke's abode, wherever that was. And Paul had a disease called, that was a common, it was a viral kind of disease that happened in the Middle East, called ophthalmia. And it caused blindness, but it also caused severe swelling. of the eye area and oozing of pus and all kinds of things. They couldn't be healed. They didn't have any antibiotics. So Paul was extremely ugly to look at. Not, he probably was ugly anyway, but with that ophthalmia and the oozing pus that was coming from his eyes and almost total blindness. So Luke then traveled from then on with Paul as his personal physician. Now these are the saints. Luke was the most educated of any of them. Now notice, Luke, the beloved physician, and then he says, and Demas greet you.
Who's Demas?
Go to 2 Timothy 4:10. I'm glad you asked.
What
are you doing here? 2 Timothy 4:10. Paul's last letter, 4 verse 6, For I am now ready to be offered, and the time of my departure is at hand. I have fought a good fight. I have finished my course. I have kept the faith. Henceforth there is laid up for me a crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, shall give me at that day, and not to me only, but unto all them also that love his appearing. Do thy diligence to come shortly unto me, for Demas hath forsaken me, having loved this present world, and is departed unto Thessalonica, Crescens to Galatia, Titus to Dalmatia. Only Luke is with me. Now remember, not only was Mark, this kid, during the time of the crucifixion, who ran naked from the Garden of Gethsemane, Mark was also, a few years later, the young disciple of Paul, who was afraid of the beasts at Ephesus, and Paul kicked him out, sent him back to Jerusalem. Demas, here, who is mentioned, Paul saluting, betrayed Paul. These are the great men of the Bible. Go back to Colossians. Luke, the beloved physician, and Demas greet you. Salute the brethren which are in Laodicea, in Nymphas, and the church which is in his house. And as I said, there is not one record of a Christian church. For the first 300 years of the church, it was in any place other than a house. Because the church was just the people. The minions that were gathered, 10 to 20 people. Synagogues. They weren't even supposed to be in a house. Remember, the synagogues were supposed to be on top of hills without any walls. Remember that? But by the time of Christ, the same thing happened. Synagogue Judaism had started. And so in Jerusalem, there were 248 synagogues. Because there's no such thing as synagogue Judaism, and there's certainly no such thing as synagogue or church Christianity. There is only temple Judaism, and if the temple isn't standing, there's no more Judaism, because now the temple is in the New Jerusalem. There is no more house of God, because the house of God is in the New Jerusalem.
The synagogues were churches, just like us.
Right, the synagogues in most of the world were in houses, but the synagogues in Jerusalem, which had become apostate, were buildings, and in a few other places. And it not only it became they then began to have synagogues for like-minded people. They had synagogues for carpenters and synagogues for rich guys and synagogues for winemakers. I mean, it had become apostate. It wasn't up on the hill, the threshing floor where the wind blew away the chaff, where there were only 10 to 20 people at rest. Now, what do we have? What's modern Christianity? Modern Christianity is synagogue Judaism. You were saying?
This reminds me of yesterday when Michael said that friends and family ask him about going to church. Just the phrase, go to church. I mean, you know, the question is, when do you leave the church?
You don't. That's why there's... Don't get me started on that. Salute the brethren which are in Laodicea and Nymphis, and the church which is in his house. And when this epistle is read among you, cause that it be read also in the church of Laodicea, and that you likewise read the epistle from Laodicea. Actually, that probably either that is lost in antiquity, or he's talking about the book of Ephesians, the letter to the Ephesians, which is most scholars think it is. And say to Archippus, take heed to the ministry which thou hast received in the Lord, that thou fulfill it. That's a somebody in Colossia wasn't doing what he was. He had gone fishing. And so there was a word of warning directly to this guy. He was probably supposed to be the head of that community. Take heed that you fulfill what God has called you to do. The salutation by the hand of me, Paul, remember my bonds, grace be unto you. Now what he did, he only wrote like he signed his letters. In one case, one of the letters he wrote, the letters were each about a foot high, because that's the best he could do to see. Now these are the saints, the screw-ups, the two-bit disciples, that somehow the world has sainted, caused them to be separate from you, that they are special people, anointed of God. They're not any more special than you and I are. And it's an apostasy. Am I communicating?
Yeah. That's the same thing. Making people special is the same thing as going to church. All of it is to distance this and to make yourself separate.
Well, it's also to excuse you. It's only those other guys that are disciples. There's Christians, there's believers, and then there are disciples. That's what I hear all the time. Where's that in the Bible? Find that. Find a differentiation between a saint, which is simply the Greek word hagios, and a believer or a disciple. They're all the same. Well, that takes us through the book of Colossians. Who knows where we'll go next? The shadow knows. What?
I'm kind of a footnote question. What are these letters, the originals, lying around somewhere in museums? Are they all lost?
The originals are lost, but there are thousands upon thousands of quotes from them in extant literature, so that they can essentially piece them all back together again. Anybody else? Nothing happened. No thoughts came to your mind.
I was thinking, you had some guys that had left and then had come back, and then there's another guy who was there during that time, then he leaves, and it's like this,
revolving
God,
door.
Like God puts up with that because that's in that flux was where the faith was being tested.
Right.
You know, and it was not a static thing. You know, I think that's the deal with it. You know, you think about a saint, it's like suddenly these, you know, there's some kind of stamp and then you're static. And, you know, and from eternity that may be true, but in the actual ins and outs of, you know, relating to Paul and all the stuff that's going on.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same in the Old Testament.
Yeah.
With, you know, Moses forsook the riches of Egypt for the sake of Christ. No, he didn't. He was chased out because he killed an Egyptian guard. But the New Testament says he forsook the riches of Egypt. Well, in faith, he did. That's why if the New Testament was being written today about you, it would just say you were called out into the mystery, even though you screwed up so badly you couldn't breathe. Moses ran for his life. But from God's standpoint, he forsook the riches of Egypt, preferring the sufferings of Christ. That's not what it looks like at any time. That's why you can't separate yourself from these people. You can't think that there's somebody better than you or worse than you. Is that clear to everyone?
You didn't go into Saul's background.
No. That's everybody knows that.
In the movie Last Temptation, it's interesting. Saul's the one that killed Lazarus after Christ had raised him.
It's probably not based on anything except the imagination of some writer. What's it? Kazantzakis? Kazantzakis? Is that the guy that wrote The Last Temptation?
The book, yeah. One of those Greek kind of.
I think it's Kazantzakis. No, I mean, those.
Mario Puzo.
Yeah, right. No, that kind of crap is just crap.
I know, but it. Up until that time, I didn't. You know, you talk about Paul or Saul, you know, killing the Christians. Well, you know, it's kind of a generic thing. But to actually think he would go so far as to shut up the resurrected witness.
Well, he was the one that was debating Stephen in the temple. And this ignorant fisherman wiped him out in a debate. And so he was given the honor because the Sanhedrin then sentenced Stephen to stoning. He was he was given the honor of the cloak. Stephen's cloak was given to Paul. And so he sat there and maybe threw the first stone, but then watched Stephen being stoned to death. And as he was stoned, he looked up into heaven and saw the mystery of God. And that just ate on Paul. You can imagine how much that ate. And then he was sent to Damascus, Syria, to quell the Christians or quash the Christians there. Quash the Christians.
Quick wash. Quickly and clean the squash.
And he was just haunted by what he had seen in Stephen. So I'm sure there was something going on where he called out to God that isn't recorded. It says, "Saul, Saul, why do you resist the divine impulse?" It's interesting. He was blinded there by the light of God, and he was blinded later by Gentile infection.
It sure wasn't a Jewish virus.
No, it was Gentile. Now somebody's going to repeat that.
Shows the futility of repeating your
words. Anybody else have any? I mean, to me, this stuff is fascinating. It only took me about a jillion years to dig it all out.
Which of these books was written first, Timothy or Colossians? In other words, did Demas...
Second Timothy was...
Was the last
book. And so this... apparently Demas had forsaken him before.
How was Paul executed? Was he executed or did
he
die?
He was executed in Rome.
How did he do it?
I'm glad you asked that. Yeah, I don't have it. I have a little thing that says what he was executed by. Let me just read these for your benefit, since you haven't heard them for a long time. All of the apostles were insulted by the enemies of their master. They were called to seal their doctrines with their blood, and notably did they bear the trial. Matthew suffered martyrdom by being slain with a sword in Ethiopia. Mark died in Alexandria after being cruelly dragged through the streets of the city. Luke was hanged upon an olive tree in Greece. John was put to death in a cauldron of boiling oil and banished to Patmos. Peter was crucified at Rome with his head downward. James the Greater was beheaded at Jerusalem. James the Less was thrown from a lofty pinnacle of the temple and beaten to death with a fuller's club. Bartholomew was skinned alive. Andrew was bound to a cross where he preached to his persecutors until he died. Thomas was killed with a lance in India. Jude was shot to death with arrows. Matthias was first stoned and then beheaded. Barnabas was stoned to death at Salonica. Paul, after various tortures and persecutions, was at length beheaded in Rome by the Emperor Nero. These are great, rich, successful men. And all of them died alone. All they would have had to say was just change a couple of words, and they would have been spared. Thomas in India. Well, maybe, you know, Jesus is like your God so-and-so. Okay. He's just another, or Paul in Athens. Jesus is like Zeus. No, he said, Jesus is this unknown God who you... not like these gods you ignorantly serve. Anyhow, I pray that the knowledge of these things produces some zeal in you instead of the indolent sloth that is so common. What? You. Oh, you just had your mouth open. All righty. How come I have to, to get Mike to talk is like pulling teeth.
Call him an indolent sloth.
What's going on, Mike?
It really struck me the first time how ordinary these guys are.
Good. But they became extraordinary because of Christ in them. Because they no longer paid any attention, gave no breath to their mind or their emotions. All righty, take it, big guy.